on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish. Mind your step. Don't break your rod. Put on the life jacket. Let's get ready to kick off the lines and head out to sea. First cast on The Big Fish, land-based snapper, a masterclass with that absolute guru, Alex Bellissimo. He's amazing. He'd catch him in a bathtub. Despite the cyclonic rain, or possibly because of the cyclonic rain, the mud crabs have really come on. Up on the Tweed, Stinker will take you there. And Flathead Stocking, once again, Victoria leading the way. All coming up on The Big Fish. You love snapper. I think every one of the big fish loves snapper. They're such a beautiful fish. They're a great table fish. They're a hard-fighting fish. They're pretty smart sometimes, or sometimes they bite like maniacs as well. But land-based snapper around Sydney, those hard-fished rock platforms and in the harbour, it's something that Alex Bellissimo has cut his teeth on and has had some great success over the years. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm going well. I know it's easier to catch whiting off the beach. It's much easier to catch a flathead or a kingfish. But land-based snapper is truly the rockfish's highest accolade, I think. A good snapper off the stones, I reckon you'd just about remember every one, wouldn't you?
Oh, well, I get a lot of snapper. They're pretty hard to remember every one. But the thing is, I certainly remember the larger fish. And I still remember my largest one all those years ago when I was about 20 years old. It was 18 three-quarter pounds, which is about 8.4 kilos. But the thing is, it was so long ago, it's sort of hardly worth mentioning. That was back in the early 80s. You know, every year I managed to snap up to around 70 centimetres. And I've got some mates that get them up to sort of the mid-70s, even up to 80 centimetres. From time to time, but you know, and there is some years where I get even larger snapper than 70. But you know, at the end of the day, fishing for snapper off the rocks in Sydney can be a perplexing task. But it's doable. That's the thing.
Low light, the best, Alex. I'm just watching one of your videos. The latest one you posted is wash snapper rock fishing, and you got onto a school, a beautiful little squire. You caught tons of them and kept four or five for a feed. And they're just gorgeous fish. They're just beautiful 30-centimetre plus snapper, which I think is the minimum size. And you're using Australian prawns. And we've had a couple of our big fish listeners take us to task for saying to use prawns. But these are Aussie prawns. They're not Vanimai ones. They're wild-caught prawns that are swimming in that water anyway. They're not imported prawns. And I think that's okay, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I always stick to the wild stock because I want to support our industry anyway. But there is a lot of anglers, and I see a lot of anglers using the Vanimai type prawns. The problem is actually policing the fact that they're actually using a farm black tiger or a Vanimai prawn. But the thing is, I stick to the wild stocks, which are caught in South Australia, Queensland, and Northern Territory, and like you know the Eastern King prawn. Basically, the banana prawn or endeavour prawn, you know, and anything that's wild, like a good wild prawn. If you can get a large Hawkesbury prawn, like not a small one, but a large Hawkesbury prawn, they work very well because they're a local prawn. Obviously, you know, they're caught. They're netted in the rivers, right around sort of in Hawkesbury. So us Sydney siders and people from the northern. Well, up and down the coast can purchase a Hawkesbury prawn or any of the rivers up and down the coast. As long as the prawns are a grade of around that sort of 50 to the pound, right? I know it's an unusual sort of grading system, but that's usually the grading. It's if you get 40 or 50s of the pound, that they're a fairly decent sized prawn. But when it comes to the king prawns, you usually get say 16-20s or 20-30s, and you'll see that on the carton as well. And they're a large enough prawn as well. And plus the shells are thick enough. Where with the small school prawns, you'll find that the small school prawns have got two problems. They're a small bait, and plus the shells are quite thin, and which allows a lot of the undesirable species just to hammer them, see? So, but yeah, prawns, pilchards, squid, a lot of the fish baits like tailor, bonito, any of those oily, bloody fish have worked very well. You know, frigate mackerel tuna, all fantastic baits.
And you don't have to rock fish. It's great that you're wearing your life jacket and showing people rock safety in your latest video, but you'll catch those squire inside Sydney Harbour in good numbers. You'll catch them in Lake Macquarie, now that it's a recreational fishing haven, in good numbers. You'll catch them in the bigger estuaries and up the Hawkesbury, particularly around the mouth of the Hawkesbury, in good numbers when they're on, you know, that you'll get those fish. Harder to get land-based, though, you know, out of a boat, much easier. So you don't make it easy for yourself, Alex Bellissimo, but you, as we found out in a recent episode, get so seasick that you've become a land-based fishing expert.
Oh, well, yeah. So way back when I was working for a person called Laurie, when I was about 17 or 18, off Long Reef, and I was doing some jury fishing, because he was a licensed pro. I was just taking seasick tablets daily, and they were messing with my stomach as well. So I could only do that for a few months. And if I didn't take the seasick tablets, man, I just got really sick. But look, land-based fishing, I mean, look, I feel a bit envious about the boat angler, because they're actually on top of the fish, literally. And they can go out and find the fish. If the fish aren't there, they can move very easily. The only downside of rock fishing is that if you choose a headland to go into that headland, the fish go off the bite quite early, especially low-light species like snapper. So you need to choose the right spot, get into them early, preferably early, and you get out fairly early as well. And that also applies in that low-light period just before dark as well, where you sort of get in there sort of, in the late afternoon, or sort of just before say dark, and then you fish up to the dark period, and then after dark. Yeah, I don't recommend people fish after dark off the rocks. By the way, it's only if you know what you're doing, and because they're a low light species, you get snapper just before dark and just after dark as well. But you see, the problem is with snapper is that you need to find the right spot where, when you're in a boat, you can go and find them. And you can go from one reef to the next.
It's The Big Fish with Alex Bellissimo, rock and beach and estuary fishing land-based guru from Sydney. And he takes people and teaches them all the skills if you want to really see it. Because we can talk about it as much as we like, Alex, but it's great to see it. That's where your video channel has been superb. And the latest edition is catching some terrific pinkies or squire or small snapper, as people call them, off the rocks. Enough for a feed, and they're just beautiful little fish, and to know that they can also go up to, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 pound in the old days, they're truly remarkable. But if the rocks are a little bit too wild for most people, you've got a lot of land-based spots around Sydney Harbour where you can catch snapper and squire, don't you?
Absolutely. Look, at the end of the day, they're not as prolific and not as large generally. But there is times there where the snapper get quite large in Sydney Harbour. And you do get a handful of them. Every year there's snapper of 65 centimetres being caught, even 70 centimetres. But they're few and far between. So for every 170 centimetre, 60 centimetre snapper caught in Sydney Harbour, there's a few dozen being caught off the ocean rocks, even around Sydney. So don't go out and just go, okay, I'm going to go and fish for some big snapper off in Sydney Harbour. You know, at the end of the day, you're also going to get more of the plate size ones, and you don't get them all year round as well. So you will get snapper all year round, but you'll probably get the odd one all year round. But generally, around between March and the end of May is the better times for them. And you'll get a mix of trevally and tarwine and brim and flathead as well, and whiting. that's obviously whiting if you're using like a prawn bait or a pink nipper or a worm bait, you know. So, but, you know, bait thigh snapper in Sydney Harbour is actually a reality, right? And you can do relatively well on them. I've had days there where you get half a dozen. Back in the old days, I used to fish off the very end of Manly Wharf. Well, that was back when it was legal to be able to fish for them. And I used to be able to bag out of them there, you know, so. But nowadays you can't fish, obviously, the end of Manly Wharf. Most Manly Wharf you can't fish off anyway. But the surrounding rocks around there, you can get snapper around there.
Do they respond well to burley inside the harbour, Alex?
They do respond well to burley, right? But the thing is, right, you're going to end up with a lot of bait fish. And that also applies off the ocean rocks. So when you're fishing off the ocean rocks, you get the large yellowtail, you get those large sweep, and you get mados. And in amongst those three types of small fish, they're just in plague proportion. So this is where you need quite a robust bait, like a largish king prawn or a banana or an endeavour prawn, which has got that thicker shell, and it's like a shield. So it blocks out, well, it doesn't block them out. It slows down the yellowtail, the sweep, and the mato, you know, to an extent. Or a good squid strip as well, like a good firm piece of squid. A pilly works okay, but if those small bait fish are in plague proportion, you'll end up with like a skeleton, you know, literally, or no bait left. And that also applies in Sydney Harbour. So you've got to be careful if you're burling up. So if you burly up, you're generally fishing in a lot closer. But if you're casting out, say, a 1 or 2 ounce sinker, like a little swivel bomb, and you can punch it out with a aerodynamic bait, you get 60 or 70 metres using 6 to 8 kilo line. And you can even use your rock fishing rod, right, which is a say 6 to 10 kilo max, and just punch it out and fish on the bottom. Alternatively, as you mentioned regarding the burley aspect of it, you need deep water, which is what you need when you're fishing the ocean rocks anyway. So if you're fishing the ocean rocks and you're fishing in the estuary, you need quite deep water because snapper do you like that deeper water, you know, especially around that sort of 8 meters plus. So, but anyway, look, snapper.
Are there lots of spots like that in Sydney Harbour on both sides?
So George's Head is a good spot to try. You can try off Balmoral Beach, off the rocks there at Balmoral, which is down the other end of Edwards. You get a few snapper there as well. You can try Clifton Gardens. Clifton Gardens is really deep water. So you can try the surrounding rocks off there. You do get the odd snapper off there and off the front as well. Langs Point, which is over in the eastern suburbs part, you get a few snapper off there. Look, I can just go on with quite a few spots.
Go on forever. And the fact is this time of year they do start to school up. They bite well. They eat great. 30 centimetres, of course, is the size limit, but Squire, it'd still be fairly common there, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. Look, apart from, you know, there being a, because it's actually a nursery for tiny brim snapper, tiny ludricks, whitings, and so forth. And the sizes get larger and larger with most of those species. But you'll find that the snapper, they come into spawn from the ocean. You'll get a percentage of them coming in from the ocean spawning around between March and May. So you do tend to get more snapper around that period in the harbour. So fishing for them in the harbour, casting out wide, even just a very basic rig with a sinker sliding straight to the swivel, a leader of about, say, 50 centimetres, a 1.0 or 2.0 size hook, and half a pilchard or a prawn or a squid strip is a good place to start, right? And casting into that deeper water.
The best one you got off the rocks, as we heard earlier on, was around about 18 pounds, and that was a while back. What's the best one you've caught inside Sydney Harbour off the shore?
It was quite a long time ago. It was about 63 centimetres. I tell you who has caught some big snapper in Sydney Harbour. That's Craig McGill. He often gets fish about tours. He got one. I think about 2-3 years ago. That was about 17 or 18 pound. I think it was.
Yeah, but he's cheating. He's in a boat. We're talking about land base here, Alex. I mean, I reckon you should be able to add 2 pound to every fish you catch off the shore compared to McGillis, as a handicap.
I guess so. But, you know, I just want to give him accolades for the fact that he got such a massive... It was the biggest snapper I heard of in Sydney Harbour for so long. I thought I'd just mention it.
Yeah, that was up middle Harbour, I think, where it's quite deep, isn't it?
I think it might have been up around sort of Seaforth Bluff, somewhere like that. But anyway, yeah, you're right. I think it was in Middle Harbour. But look, everyone, before you race out in your boat and start fishing the snapper out there, just remember that fish that size are rare, you know. So that era where they were catching snapper, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 kilo, around the Spit Bridge area and in Middle Harbour and North Harbour and throughout the harbour, you know, that was decades ago, you know. It was actually before I started fishing, and I've been fishing for 4.5 decades, you know, so, yeah, well, at least 4.5 decades, actually. But, North Harbour, you can go into North Harbour as well and get a few snapper there. As I mentioned, you know, Manly Wharf, you've got the surrounding rocks there. You've got the, I think it's Manly Point, which is basically opposite the gasworks, the old gasworks. You've got the Rock Point, which is about 250 metres west of Manly Wharf. You get a few snapper off there as well. You've got Dobroyd Point casting... some of the rocks there casting towards back towards Manly. You can get some snapper there as well. You know, but so in amongst the snapper, you'll get flathead, brim, whiting, as I mentioned earlier, whiting, providing using the right baits for whiting, flounder. You know, so you get a variety of fish as you're fishing for snapper as well. So
low light, yes, low anyway. Light inside too, low light, you know, early morning. Into the dusk at night, the crack times as well?
Well, look, fishing the harbour after dark is a lot safer than fishing the ocean rocks after dark. So, yes, you can fish after dark. So on those moon nights, even the dark nights as well, you can get some good reds after dark as well. But you'll find those deeper spots do produce snapper. But, you know, Luna Park Wharf or Jeffrey Street Wharf can produce some snapper. But there was I've seen some photos of these guys, and I don't know if they caught them from there. I think they caught them from the piers, which is near near the Harbour Bridge. I think it's P1 or P2. And these fish looked like they were at least 70, 75 centimetres. Now, I don't know if that was photoshopped. I don't know if they were caught there, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were caught there. But every year there's some good snapper, 50, 60 centimetres caught in Sydney Harbour, and it seems to be that deep water where there's often some good-sized snapper being caught as well.
Alex, so, it's getting us all in the mood for it. It's the time when they start to move in. It's a good time for the mulloway too. It's a good time of the year for land-based fishers in general. And if people check out your YouTube channel, they see how it's done, you pulling them in one after the other off the rocks. Tight lines, buddy.
Tight lines too, mate. Great talking to you.
Good to talk again. Alex Bellissimo is an absolute genius when it comes to land-based fishing around Sydney and the Northern Beaches.
It's on the Big Fish Show. all the water.
Wade in the water.
Wade in the water, children.
Wade in the water.
God's gonna trouble the water. The River Jordan is chilly and cold. Wade in the water.
Wade in the water.
Wade in the water, children.
Wade in the water.
God's gonna trouble the water. You don't believe I've been redeemed.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Stinker, you're up on the Tweed. I know you've got the old family home there and you went up to see if the floodwaters had come in. It's right at water level, isn't it? Was there any damage?
No, no. I'm amazed, really. We've come up here and, of course, the forecasts were pretty grim. And I'm thinking, oh, I'll be knee-deep in the house. You know, the water will come up and, yeah, that's what I expected. Well, we didn't get anything. And I've got a pontoon in the backyard, and I can fish. I could underarm a tennis ball from the lounge room into the river, and we never got it. So we were the lucky people. I don't think the Tweed got too badly hammered at all. A lot of big trees were down. And that's the only sort of visual evidence that there has been a sort of a cyclone.
And our listeners would feel like they know the old family home on the Tweed, because you've shared so many great stories. The time your dad tied a line to the mower and a dewey pulled it into the lake, and then the time you put a line through your bedroom window and tied it to your toe to see if you could catch a mangrove jack, and the time you tied a line to the mango tree to try to catch a mangrove jack. So they've got a pretty good mind's eye picture of your backyard running into the water there. So I'm very surprised that you didn't get some flooding. There were hundreds of millimetres up in the catchment.
Yes, well, you know, it's just, I suppose, luck more than anything else. But so what I've been doing, I've come up and to check and see what's wrong. Well, nothing's wrong. So I jumped in the boat and I decided to go mud crab. Well, I just decided to find out whether there are any crabs here at all. So I don't use, you can still use witches' hats in the Tweed River. Well, I won't use witches' hats. I think they're, that they should be banned in New South Wales. That's what I think about witches' hats. As they are in Queensland and Western Australia, you can't use a witch's hat.
And Victoria. And Victoria, Stinker.
Yeah, what about South Australia? I don't even know whether they get crabs. Yeah, they do.
Oh, they get blue swimmers in South Australia. I'm not sure about South Australia. I'll have to have a look.
But whether they're allowed to use witch's hats, I don't think so. Anyway, that's worth finding out. But so I use a trap. And you illegally can use two traps, and so I put out two traps, and I reckon mullet is the best bait in Australia for most things. You know, a good old mullet. There's not much that you can't catch on a mullet. Anyway, I put a mullet in each trap and took them up into the lake and dropped them where I always drop them, up amongst the mangroves. And I went back, this was only a couple of days ago, and I went up and I pulled the first trap and it never had a thing. And I'm thinking, oh, this is a bit disappointing. Maybe it's too much fresh water. But then I pulled the second one and there in it were two thumping, great, crankiest mud crab you've ever seen. And they were really wanted to get stuck. They must have spoken about it because they both at the same time attacked me. And, I tell you what, I had to take a step back because they were thumpers.
That's great, Stinky. You've got to know how to handle them too. I've been bitten by plenty of blue swimmers, but that's not life-threatening. But with the muddies, you can lose a digit.
It's like a slow amputation if a mud crab gets hold of you. Yeah, that's true. And then I set another trap. We love mud crab here. My favourite, you know, seafood is probably blue swimmer crab. Of all the seafood that's available, and there's some, and you can get beautiful prawns up here at Tweed Edge too, and buy them straight off the trawler, which is another asset. But and they're beautiful. But if I had to rate seafood, I would have the blue swimmer crab on top, and probably mud crab second, and then fresh prawns third, and surprisingly, about a bit further down the list, I'd have a lobster. And yet, you're paying sometimes these days up maybe $150 for a lobster.
I'd much rather have a Moreton Bay bug ahead of a lobster, a slipper crab. You know, the bugs, they look funny, but geez, they're good to eat as well. They're sort of like a cross between a prawn and a blue swimmer. I've just looked up too that in South Australia, where there are lots of recreational crabbers, only dilly pots, you know, the drop nets, are allowed. You're allowed to go raking for them too, which is a strange thing they do, where they walk through the tidal lagoons and coastal lagoons, and they have this funny rake, and then they rake the sand, and then the crab flares up out of the sand. They flip it over and put it into a bucket, and but that's it. You're not allowed to use traps or witch's hats. So they're banned in South Australia, which is a big blue swimmer crab fishing community as well. So, yeah, they're pretty well banned in every state, I'm sure, bar New South Wales for some reason, because they're just absolute ghost fishing killers, aren't they?
They are. I don't know what's going on in this state when it comes to crabbing, because, I mean, in your waters around Gosford, the Brisbane water, well, you can't use a witch's hat there. And then you can't use a witch's hat in Port Stephens but you can use a witch's hat everywhere else. It just doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, that's that. Then I went out again a couple of days later, which was only day before yesterday, and I set another trap, and I lifted it. I set the two, and I lifted the first one, again, nothing. And I'm thinking, oh, well, this is, you know, I had two others, so that's all good. But I lifted it, and it's quite exciting, you know. Even as long as I've been doing this, it's quite exciting. I've got a peewee that's absolutely giving me a hard time. I don't know whether you can hear it, but this peewee is really giving me a hard time at the moment.
Good on him. No, you deserve a hard time. He sounds like a friendly fella.
Well, he's noisy, I can tell you that much. But so I lifted the second trap, and in it, there was this great big thumping male mud crab. Oh, gee. And of course, those who catch mud crabs regularly will tell you that if they've got a brown underbelly, then they are full of meat. If they've got a blue or a greenish underbelly, Australia's peewee is making such a noise. Can you hear him?
I can indeed, Stinker. I think he wants to be part of the show. He might be
after
a bit of crab.
He wants a bit of 15 seconds of fame, this peewee. I can see it. He's a beauty. So I had this great big thumping mud crab. And so you boil it up. I boil them. There are numerous ways you can go about cooking mud crab, but I simply boil them and then eat them that way, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, that's all you need to do, isn't it? You know, you can put them to sleep in the ice slurry and or in the freezer, and then pop them in the pot. That peewee, he's a bloody, he's a beauty. I think he must be someone's pet, Stinker. He likes mud crabs too.
See it, Ingram? It'll come right up to my foot, and if I put a bit of grain on my foot, it'll peck my foot. He's got no idea of fear. He won't give up. But now what amazes me up here in this particular waterway is the amount of yabbies. Well, I call them yabbies, really others call them nippers. It depends upon how you were brought up. But in Tweed, everyone calls them yabbies. Now, interestingly, Scott, this is crazy. I was searching through the form guide of the races the other day, the horse races, and there's a horse called Yabby Pump. Would you believe that?
A horse called Yabby Pump.
I don't know if it's any good, but anyway, the fancy, the beautiful horse, how he trots out onto the race course, and they say, I've got, you know, 5-1 Yabby Pump.
Hey, how did things go? I remember there was a threat to these really productive yabby beds in the Tweed system, with tourists loving them to death, you know, jumping all over them. Was that resolved? Have they worked out a way to do that sustainably now?
It was resolved, and it's a very, very good example how the community or members of the community who care for the environment and for the habitat, how they can work with New South Wales Fisheries and get a good outcome. And that's exactly what happened. It took a while, a little bit too long for me, but never mind, it happened. And we got it to all worked out to the satisfaction of all stakeholders. And now the yabby banks that were hammered as far as a tourist destination or attraction, they were a tourist attraction. Well, we didn't think that was fitting. Anyway, what's happened, the areas that were hammered and become quite desolate, I'm pleased to report, are coming back. And it's a great thing, a really great thing. So I can go up into the lakes now and see all those areas that were sort of become desert because they were overused, maybe. But now they're just rich with yabby. So, and what also amazes me is the area that the yabbies are now. These yabbies, I reckon, if I had to have, I don't know much about acres and hectares and all that sort of thing, but I talk in football fields, and I reckon there'd be 15 to 20 football fields up there at low tide that are just chock-a-block full of yabbies. The holes are it's like a massive honeycomb. I went up there yesterday and I dug, for 5 minutes, probably 10 digs, I suppose. And like I was averaging 6 to 8 yabbies every dig. Unbelievable.
Very easy to get a great bait, a really good bait to jiggle around and wave on the hook. They're fantastic. Whiting, brim, everything loves them.
They're a great bait. I must tell you, I might have even told you once before, but before we moved here to Terranora Creek, Terranora Lake, the old family lived on a water passage called the Eucary Bar Passage, which is at South Tweed, and the passage runs parallel to the Pacific Highway, and it's a mangrove area and heavily weeded, and a lot of Aboriginal culture involved in that particular area. And Neville Bonner, Senator Neville Bonner, was born on Eucary Bar Island. And he was the first Aboriginal senator in Australia, and so we're very proud of that. But when I was growing up and at school, I used to set my traps in the Eucary Bar. It's a great place. Interestingly, too, today, you're not allowed to take a motorboat up in there. I think it's to protect the seagrass. I think that's the reason. But it's just boiling with life. But when I was at school, I caught 3 thumping big crabs, and I pulled them up before I went to school, and I put them in one of those old concrete wash basins, wash tubs. You know the old concrete ones?
Yeah, yeah. They should be right in there.
Hey, well, I thought so. And I come home from school to cook them, and they're gone. And I said to my mother, I said, you cooked those crabs? She said, no. I said, well, they've escaped. They jumped out. Well, I don't know how they did it, but they were big crabs, but they got out of it. And then I went looking for them. I searched in the corners of the buildings and under the fridge and under the lounge room. I searched everywhere for these 3 crabs. And it was about a week and a half or 2 weeks later, I found them, one on top of the other, 3 of them piled in one little corner in the extreme corner of our property. They got to the fence and couldn't get through the fence, and they'd all died, sadly, but they were trying to get back to the creek, and they got to the closest they could. But because there was a fence there, they couldn't get through. Oh, gee, it was disappointing. I'd rather them have got away.
Yeah, Stinkers, talking mud crabs on the Tweed. And, Stinker, this was good success you've had after the water, all the water coming down. Do you think the fresh might stir them up a bit?
Oh, I think so. I don't really know how a mud crab thinks. I don't even know whether they do think. Gee, I tell you what, it's a thrill, a real thrill. And blue swimmers, blue swimmers are more of a summer thing up here. But if you pull up your trap and you've got half a dozen big blue swimmers in there, I mean, that's really thrilling. It's a great thing. I'll tell you what I did last night. I was with a friend and his granddaughter, and she's only, I don't know, she's just started school. Anyway, we set her all up with a rod, her new rod. Well, she caught a brim. I have never seen a kid so excited about catching a fish. She danced and she sang and she jumped up and down. And it was a pleasure, a dead set pleasure, to watch one miserable brim bring so much enjoyment to this kid. And she's hooked for life. And she was quite happy to let it go, and off it swam, and she was quite satisfied with that. And I thought, well, you know, there's far more to fishing than just sitting there catching fish, you know.
We're speaking to Stinker on The Big Fish. I was thinking about mud crabs getting away, and a very, very funny story. When I lived, I was a young bachelor in Townsville, my first radio job, first time away from home. I was about 19. And I had a couple of mates who were obsessed in fishing too. And we used to fish off the wharfs and catch golden trevally and all sorts of stuff, finger mark brim. and we went to a place, Cape Cleveland, to go crab pot fishing. So we had two pots each, you know, had the legal limit, and we've gone out to this creek. We've driven him a little Suzuki four-wheel drive right out through the bush, and a bloke had given me this secret spot, and we put the crab pots out, and we sat there, got eaten by mozzies all night, and we got some good crabs. We got a bucket full of beautiful big male crabs. We let the females go, so we're really, really excited, and it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. We've driven back to the Bruce Highway through the bush, and I've taken the turn a bit too quickly coming onto the highway, and Paul was in the front. His brother, twin brother Roger, was in the back. They're Irish lads, and the crab bucket fell over, and he was crouching in the bucket, and they've all got out. There were about six in there, and they all got out, and a big one grabbed the fleshy part of his thigh, came up, and thank goodness it didn't get another part of his anatomy. He screamed blue murder, jumped over the front seat, put his arms around my head. I've swerved off the road and nearly crashed into the ditch. We've all jumped out. It's just, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. There's no one on the road. We've all jumped out screaming, and he's jumped out the back door, and the crabs have jumped out as well. And they're running around with their claws up on the highway. It was a nightmare. It was bedlam.
They're cranky things. I have never, ever met a happy mud crab. They're all cranky, a whole lot of them. I don't know what it is, and I don't know how they learn that they've got to be cranky. But I have another little story to tell you, and anyone who's listening, is that I used to sell raffle tickets down at the Country Club Hotel at Shoal Bay in Port Stephens every Thursday afternoon. And this one particular day in the afternoon, in comes Jimmy Chalkley. Now, Jimmy's a commercial fisherman, and he had half a fish box full of mud crabs, and they were all tied up. And that's the best way for them to be. You feel a bit better about it when they're tied up. But anyway, Jimmy went to the toilet, and while he was away, a friend of his, fishermen do funny things to it. Well, you know, they are friends, but they do some extraordinary things. They pull stunts on each other. Anyway, Benny Tarrant has got out his pocket knife, and he's cut them loose. And they're running around in the pub with their claws up, like you say, and they're all cranky, and they're clapping their claws together. Well, the barmaids have all screamed, and they've jumped up on the bar, and all the others have run out the door, and then Jim's come out of the toilet, and here he had about 15 mud crabs running around in the front bar of the Country Club Hotel. Well, I couldn't sell me raffle tickets. No one wanted to buy a raffle ticket. It was all self-preservation. I said, please, Jimmy, catch your crab so that I can sell me raffle tickets.
Did they round them all up?
Oh, they did. They did. But the manager, who was a newly appointed manager of the club, and Glenny Tarrant, who let them loose, there's a big sign up that said, no pets allowed. Glenny Tarrant has gone up to the new manager and he said, I'd like for you to speak to Jimmy Chalkley because you've got a sign up there that says no pets allowed, and he's got 15 of his friends running around on the floor. They're funny men, fishermen. They're all commercial fishermen. All those, that's all finished, you know. With that era of old fishermen, the young ones don't get up to all that nonsense.
No, well, the stories will survive, Stinker. Thanks for sharing it, mate. That's an absolute cracker.
Hooray, Scott.
It's the Big Fish, and I've been in Tasmania recently, enjoyed some great fly fishing, but talking to some of the locals, there are issues in the salt around stocks of sand flathead in particular. Fisheries Victoria just released 55,000 juvenile dusky flatties into waterways in East Gippsland, and now some in Tassie are suggesting authorities there could do the same with sand flathead. My colleague in Hobart, who loves a feed of flathead, Leon Compton, has caught up with the CEO of the Victorian Fisheries Authority, Travis Dowling.
Fishers are pretty straight down the line people. And when you are putting fish back in the water, it's an actual tangible. So you can do a lot of strategies, you can do a lot of concepts, you can do a lot of things, but stocking actual fish and putting them in the water is a really important thing. In Victoria, just for your listeners, we've bought out nearly all the bay and inlets around the Victorian coastline from commercial netting, And after that, we decided to accelerate or boost the recovery of some of our species in there. Things like estuary perch, like mulloway, like dusky flathead, and black brim. And what we're seeing in the Gippsland Lakes is an astounding recovery post the netting being removed of that fishery. And you just have to look at social media to see what's going on. So we stocked 55,000 dusky flathead into a number of different places over the last 3 months in Victoria. It's the fifth year running we've done that. And we're going to accelerate and build this stocking program with mulloway and estuary perch as well. And I'd really encourage our Tasmanian colleagues to jump on board. It's a great way of building fisheries.
You say you've been doing this with flathead for 5 years. How long does it take a flathead to grow then to the size limit where you can catch them recreationally?
2 years. They're a really fast-growing species. Unlike a black brim that can take up to 10 to 15 years, and your average black brim that you get in the slot between 30 and 40 centimetres, they're 30-year-old fish. But flathead, they will get to, 30 to 35 centimetre length within 2 years. They grow incredibly quick. And what we've seen is where you have reduced the fishing pressure, either through transitioning out commercial netting from areas and having good size limits and bag limits and slot limits in place, you end up having an incredible fishery. And we're seeing that in the Gippsland Lakes. People would drive past the Gippsland Lakes, and those that are familiar with Victoria, they would go on to them, they'd go on to Mallacoota, they'd go on to Wingate Inlet. They're not doing that now. They're stopping in Lakes Entrance and they're having their holidays in Lakes Entrance. So it's fantastic for the local community. It's great for all the fishers out there. And, I just really encourage, I suppose Tasmania to look at that as an option.
Travis, let's talk about the economics. What does it actually take to start breeding up tens of thousands of baby flathead?
Well, this is a great story, actually. We're currently partnering with New South Wales and established marine hatcheries in New South Wales. But what we're doing, and the same could apply to Tassie, which is great, we're actually using volunteer recreational fishers. And we're holding go fishing weekends where we set up with 20 or 30 keen anglers. They go and catch all of our brood stock. So that's all of our mums and dads. We then have them either airlifted or truck freighted really quickly up to the hatchery in New South Wales that we're partnering with. They then do the breeding. We return the brood stock, so the mums and dads from the water that they've come out of after the breeding has been taken. And then we stock those babies into select waterways where we're giving them a better chance of surviving, putting them into riparian habitat that's easy for them to grow. So the economics really for a 55,000 flathead, they cost us about $2 a fish, so about $110,000. But when you look at the economic benefit, I mean, it's $2.4 billion recreational fishing industry in Victoria. It's a pretty small investment when you compare that to the returns of people visiting communities. And I think about across Tassie, visiting those communities. The tourism benefits for a place like Tassie are massive.
The CEO of the Victorian Fisheries Authority there, Travis Dowling, talking to Leon Compton in Tasmania about the issue with dwindling numbers of sand flathead, a very popular species in Tassie. Sadly, the stocks are low at the moment, so maybe restocking and a better conservation and sustainable fishing approach might be the answer.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.